This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTB Wrestling Network. Fans, welcome to this week's episode of your home for everything modern day wrestling, the only home anywhere for top-notch news and analysis, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am Scott Criscolo. Episode 175. We are 25 away from two bills. I'm going to start saying that now, like I say it on the Place to Be podcast. We got a fun show tonight. Just like some of the great teams that had guys named number 75, and I know that we've kind of been in a weird stretch of numbers for, like, unusual NBA power forwards of the mid-90s or offensive linemen you forgot about, but 75 throughout history is actually a pretty good number because arguably three of the greatest defensive linemen in NFL history all wore 75. For me personally, my guy Tony Casillas, who won a ring for the Cowboys with the Cowboys, but probably the three greatest 75s of all time. Howie Long, of course, won a ring for the Raiders with the Raiders. Now an analyst on the NFL Today on Fox. The Deke, the guy who invented the head slap, one of the greatest members, if not the greatest member of the fearsome foursome from the Los Angeles Rams, Deacon Jones, and probably the best 75 of all time. And maybe the defensive lineman. There's plenty of them equal to that, but probably the best 75 of all time. From the black and gold of the Steel Curtain defense, the great Mean Joe Green. Probably the greatest 75 of all time. The greatest number doesn't matter of all time in the history of his purple-clad football team. Joins us tonight, as always, the purveyor of the Kings of Sport Patreon, the Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on, Scotty? What's going on, everybody? I'm glad that we're all back together for the first time in a while. Mm-hmm. But hearing those great names of the past, Scott, it just makes me think of a great moment that could happen in the future where, despite all of your biases, as some of the listeners might categorize it, I'm just imagining. Backstage, Arthur Ashe Stadium. A beaten and hobbled Chris Jericho was walking down the hall, and a young babyface Scott Criscolo hands out a bottle of Coca-Cola, and Chris Jericho takes off his scarf and throws it back at Scotty and says, "Here, kid, have a Coke and a smile." That's what the people want, Scott Criscolo.
You know what? Brother Nathaniel, that may actually happen, and we'll tell you why on this program tonight. Brother Nate, always a pleasure. And joining us as well, as always, the conscience of Place to Be Nation. I'm trying to think. Was there a 75 on the Bears? I don't know. We passed Carlton Fisk. I don't know, Steve Willie. Are there any 75s in the Breezy City?
Not that I know of, but I'm going to throw the ball out to San Francisco and Todd Weber can catch it and toss it back to Barry Zito.
Former Holy crap,
Giants,
yes.
Steve on the A's as well.
Yes. Yeah, he was on both. He was on the A's and the Giants. He was on both sides of the Bay. Yes.
Oakland Stadium, the worst baseball stadium I've ever been in.
You're not the only one that's probably said that either.
Yeah, and that includes the urine-stained and smelled Milwaukee County Stadium.
Ah, come on. Stop making fun of the fine beer there. Schatz Brewery, home of Laverne and Shirley. No, I don't know. Do they have Schatz beer? That'd be awesome.
Schlitz is still...
Well, Schlitz is...
It's actually a park now. Schlitz Park. That's not a joke.
Schlitz Park, where they play Little League. Because the contract is not that hardy. Oh, geez. Anyway, guys, it's good to be back together.
Yeah.
We were off for a week, fans. We had some scheduling snafus. But you will get back-to-back episodes. We'll be here today, which is Friday, for episode 175. And next week, we will have the Mongo episode. See, already skipping ahead. The Mongo episode 176. We'll explain what that'll be next week, and then we'll go back to our bi-weekly schedule. But I wanted us to get back on our regular weeks, so we will have back-to-back episodes. But tonight, next week will be a Classics episode. We will do our the TNA Classic pay-per-view recap we've been trying to do for the last few episodes, but we will do it next week. Tonight, strictly current day, because there's a lot to talk about, ton to talk about, all over the six-pack of brands. We will conclude the episode this week by previewing Sunday's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view from the Thunderdome, as they are slowly ending the Thunderdome era, as fans will be returning. So this will probably be, actually, this will be the last pay-per-view of the Thunderdome era, because, as of course you know, on July 18th, Money in the Bank will be the first pay-per-view back with fans. So get excited for that. And then, of course, SummerSlam in Vegas, Sin City, on August 21st. We'll end the show with that, though. We got a bunch of other stuff to talk about. We got Impact, New Japan, AEW, which, yes, as the fine Nathaniel alluded to, they will be in my backyard, obviously, as I will be getting a Coke from Chris Jericho, complete with, you know, as he walks out, she takes off his scarf, hands it to me, and I go, my God, those moobs, as they cave into that divot inside of your chest, like Kofi Kingston. Kofi's isn't as bad as Jericho's, though. Anyway, and I want these guys' opinions on the news, of course, involving the NWA. So, of course, you hear my opinion every week on the Saturday special, but I want to hear these guys, because NWA announced their next pay-per-view last week, and I want to hear what their guys, what these guys' thoughts are. So, but why don't we open the show, guys, with this past weekend's Impact news? Of course, excuse me, this past week was against all odds. It was a pretty good pay-per-view from what I heard. But it opens a question about this, for me, this relationship between AEW and Impact, and how far it's, you know, it's going to go in, you know, for the future in terms of who gets what, etc. So it took place this past Saturday against all odds. There was 9 matches. Here's the results. In a street fight, Sami Callihan and Tommy Dreamer defeated the Good Brothers. Joe Doering defeated Satoshi Kojima in a singles match. Petey Williams versus Trey Miguel versus Ace Austin versus Chris Bay versus Rohit Raju ended in a no contest in a 5-way match to determine a number one contender for the X Division title. W. Morrissey defeated Rich Swann by pinfall. W. Morrissey is, of course, the artist formerly known as Big Cass. W. Morrissey's his real name. Tennille Dashwood defeated Jordan Grace. Faya and Flava defeated Kimberly and Susan to retain their Knockouts tag team titles. Violent by Design, Diener and Rhino defeated Decay by pinfall to retain the tag titles. Deonna Purrazzo continues her reign of greatness as Knockouts champion with a win over Rosemary. And in the main event, the Impact World title, which took place not at Skyway Studios, but at Daly's Place, our Impact World Champion, Kenny Omega, defeated Moose by pinfall in 22:51. I didn't get to see the show. I'm going to try to watch it this week. Nate, did you see it? And if you did, any thoughts or any thoughts in general?
I did not get to see the show for a couple of reasons. I was launching a new show on another network because I'm not monogamous when it comes to these podcasts here, Scotty. And B, you know, I had to support my Hawks as they try to vanquish Joel Embiid and these 76ers. So I had a lot going on over the weekend, Scotty. So, but I will check it out because I have heard some good things about the show. And, you know, just hearing you read off the results, like the card seems pretty stacked. But I'm sure the two of us might have missed it, but there's no way that Steve Willie, the erstwhile TNA aficionado that he may be, an Impact aficionado over all the years, there's no way Steve Willey missed it.
That's a lot to live up to. Like, you don't think that I have stuff to do over the weekend.
As Nate admits that we all have open relationships. We're so alternative here.
I did.
We're a very modern wrestling show.
We are modern. Yes, we are.
I did watch the main event because I wanted to see where, because I'm still intrigued where the Kenny Omega storyline is going, because I, for the life of me, can't figure out who is going to win the title from him. And I'm, was not Moose on this occasion. It was a very interesting main event. I think that we talked last episode, Nate, that we kind of figured the Young Bucks were going to interfere in some way. That's why, you know, they were at Daly's place. I did not like the atmosphere that much. There were really good reviews of this match. Like Bleacher Report gave it an A. I think Dave Meltzer really liked it. Guy who reviewed it, was it John Pollock that reviewed it for Post, gave it a really high marks. I thought it was a good match, an above average match. Like, it was taken seriously, so it wasn't like a comedy match by any means. Some of the Kenny Omega matches have come to the last couple defenses of the AEW title. I really liked the announcing. Callis can purposely be really annoying, but it was Tony Schiavone, who is play-by-play, and then Scott D'Amore, as well as Don Callis, and that created the interplay between the two EVPs of Impact, kind of going back and forth, where they used to be united, and now Scott D'Amore is wondering whether, you know, Callis is for Impact or for Omega, or, you know, for both. In terms of the atmosphere, what I didn't like was that it was basically an AEW dark match with the AEW competitors around ringside, but no other fans in attendance. I believe that the most recent AEW Dynamite show was the same, the way it was filmed. So it must have been after that. Moose really took it to Omega. And Omega, like, the big turnaround point, if I remember correctly, because it's been a few days since I saw it, was like Moose leapt over the barricade trying to do an avalanche to Omega and went over the top of it into the concrete. Mm-hmm. So, and then Omega took control. Eventually, Moose speared the ref. Well, Omega kind of half pulled him out in front of him. And that's when the Bucks came into the ring and did some super kicks and a BTE trigger, the Kota Ibushi's Kamigoye, basically. Mm-hmm. And Omega hit the one-winged angel for the win. And then Sami Callihan teleported from the Impact zone from Nashville to Florida. They have yet to explain this, as far as I know, how Sammy went from Nashville, Tennessee. Because the whole point of Daly's Place was that, hey, the Good Brothers aren't going to interfere. Mm-hmm. And Callihan had a match earlier on, and yeah, he teleported, beat up Kenny Omega, and then Don Callis then fired him, which, I mean, either D'Amore is going to hire him back, or, like, maybe Tony Khan will hire him for AEW as part of the storyline. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely where they're going next, is Callihan versus Omega, and Callahan's the one guy I think that could knock off Omega. I don't really see many other people on the roster at this point.
All right. So I've been thinking about this for the last like couple weeks, and I've been looking forward to being back with you fine gentlemen, my brothers, for this for our episode tonight, because this is not a criticism of the battleship sailing across my in front of my bow that is All Elite Wrestling Esquire. But now, this relationship between AEW and Impact is what? 6 months old? 7 months old now, probably? 8 months old, I guess? And I'm thinking to myself, I get the exposure thing, because that's the first thing people throw in my face when I say, this is getting ridiculous. Well, Impact's getting exposure. But when are we going to get to the point where the exposure starts becoming detrimental, because every single Impact guy is going to job out, and you're turning Impact into, like, jobber wrestling. Is Kenny just going to beat every single Impact guy until there's fucking nobody left? Like, I'm just perplexed. Like, what is the point of this now? I don't get it. Like, AEW is doing their own feuds with their own crew, and then Kenny's feuding with all the Impact guys. Like, I don't get it. Impact isn't getting jack out of this deal. And I'm sorry, at this point, exposure is not good enough. So my question is, when the hell is Impact going to get anything? Now Rich Swann's jobbing out in mid-card matches? I mean, what the hell? I don't get it. What's the point of this now? In the beginning, I thought it was cool. Kenny and, you know, the Impact, and they were doing some matches. I was not a fan of Kenny being able to beat Rich Swann. But I thought at some point, you know, Kenny drops the belt and we move on. But what is the end game here? Because in my opinion, nothing has looked good for Impact, in my opinion. And I'm dreading when we start stretching this out to other titles, because now I actually like the women's champion in AEW, and I dream exorbitantly over the Impact women's champion. So now I can't even have Deonna Purrazzo job or beat Britt Baker because I like Britt Baker. So I guess the analysis or the discussion I really want to open up is, what is the end game here with this business partnership? And is Impact not going to look like a bunch of chumps at any point? You know, get what I'm saying? Like, when is it? Because if this was WWE working with another, and I'm not trying to be a fanboy, but I'm using him as an example because everybody else gets to. So guess what? I am too. If this was WWE working with Impact, everybody would be destroying WWE. Oh, Roman Reigns jobbing all these guys out. Oh, Bobby Lashley or Drew McIntyre. Oh, of course, Impact can't get any wins. But nobody gives a shit that Kenny is just knocking guys off left and right till there's going to be no main eventers left. Am I wrong, Nate? Like, am I going a little crazy here? Doesn't it just feel like Impact has gotten nothing in terms of quality of their brand out of this deal?
I think the biggest issue for me with this is it feels like they've been rushing it a bit. Because honestly, you know, what Steve talked about, Sammy might be the guy. I think Moose was the guy out of everybody. Whether,
I thought,
you know,
so.
Like, I like Rich Swann, and Sammy's been a really good heel and a decent, like, passable babyface
right.
with Impact. But mm-hmm. out of all of these choices, Moose should have been the guy.
I
feel like it should have been something that was held off until Slammiversary. Mm-hmm. Because, A, the Kenny Moose match, I think, warrants a stage that big. And, B, you'll probably be able to have actual fans at Slammiversary by then. And so, yeah, like, I think that Impact has gained in terms of eyeballs from this. And mm-hmm. maybe that's all they want out of this. But in terms of just watching it from a storyline perspective, they needed to get some wins. And I think if you're not going to have Moose win it against all odds, then we shouldn't have had the match. We should have prolonged it. Yeah. You know, because I do feel like ultimately an impact guy has to beat Kenny. And honestly, like, I don't think it's Sammy, Steve. Like, I don't think Sammy Callahan is the guy. I thought Moose was, but now he's already got an L against Kenny. So the question is, do they rehab Moose, or do they pull the trigger with Sammy, or is it somebody that we're not even thinking about right now?
Yeah, they could do Moose in Nashville as a hometown mm-hmm. victory. I thought it was going to be Moose. I was kind of hoping it was Trey Miguel, because they brought mm-hmm. him back and put him right away at the top of the card. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be a really fun match. And they, when the Rascals left, they certainly felt like that was a huge deal. So that was who I was kind of looking at for a possible challenger. With Callahan, it feels like that's where the story is going now that Callis has fired him. So it's going to be like the talk of Callis just being done with Impact and being full-time as a manager in AEW. maybe it's like career versus career and impact. They also announced today that they're going to, they announced an announcement, Impact, that they're going to have some sort of dangerous match announcement tomorrow for Slammiversary. So actually, it'll be on Friday or Thursday or Friday when this is out. We might know that by now. I don't think it's going to be the heavyweight title match at this point because you think they would wait for the show. In terms of what Impact is getting out of this, like definitely eyeballs. That is one thing. However, I don't understand, and I was talking with a friend about this earlier today, why they make such little mention of these matches on Dynamite. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Especially, I can get like not wanting to do it before Omega won the title, but he's actually wearing the belts out on Dynamite now. So I think there was like a passing like mention of the match. The Dynamite before, it was a Friday night show, so I didn't really quite remember, but I feel like they just had a passing mention of it. But there's definitely not an advertisement.
No.
They're not.
It feels like,
Steve,
like it feels like pre-MCU Disney shows. Like it feels like how Marvel used to be with the movies and the TV, where, you know, Impact is Marvel TV. Impact is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter and Luke Cage and the Defenders and Cloak and Dagger. Like, we're going to mention the movies as much as we can so you know we're connected. And that's what Impact's doing. We're going to mention AEW as much as we can so you know we're connected. But then on the other side, like, the movies, I think once mentioned something that happened on TV. Because they didn't have to, because they were like, everybody's coming to the movies anyway. And I feel like that's what AEW is doing. But unfortunately, it doesn't help Impact, much like the movies never really helped the TV shows. And that's why we never got season 3 of Runaways, Steve Willie.
Yeah. You should read the comic book, though. Comic book's great.
Steve, before you finish, just to let you know, I'm looking at Lords of Pain right now. The announcement will be Thursday. So as we're recording, it hasn't happened yet. So by the time you hear this on Friday, the announcement will come out and we'll talk more about it, the announcement on next week's show. So just want to let you know that. So go ahead, Steve.
It's like Callis is on every week on commentary. So if you know that Omega's winning, which I'm sure they did, you think that would Callis would put that over as much as possible, say, you know, come see Omega defeat Moose. You know, on Impact Plus, get some subscriptions. You know, AEW before wasn't really getting anything out of it, and that was a criticism there. But now that Kenny's wearing the belts on television, surely they should do a little bit more. But I actually think that Impact is shifting more over to New Japan at this point than they are AEW. I think you might be safe from that Britt Baker, Deonna Purrazzo match, because there really hasn't been much crossover anymore besides Kenny. And even this week on NJPW Strong, Josh Alexander is going to be on. They had Kojima come on for Against All Odds and one of them. So, and they made him seem like a big deal, even though he's kind of, you know, an older veteran in NJPW. But just the appearance makes it a big deal. And he put over Joe Doering, and that I thought was surprised at that. But that's making Impact look good, beating these newcomers. They had El Fantasmo come in, and he won a match and then lost. Did he lose at the pay-per-view? The previous pay-per-view?
Who's that?
El Fantasmo, did he? Was he on the pay-per-view at all, or was that another show? But he lost for the X Division title.
Elephant, let's see, X Division.
It was a previous show.
Yeah, he lost to Josh Alexander.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they seem to be going a little bit more towards that, and maybe that'd be cool if G1 happens, that they have someone from Impact go over. We'll know what the relationship is like once the G1 comes. And if you don't see an AEW guy in New Japan, you know that relationship has soured a bit. If you see an Impact guy in the G1, you'll know that has picked up. Of course, that's all dependent on traveling and such.
Yeah.
Right. Slammiversary, by the way, is actually Money in the Bank weekend. It's the night before. It is Saturday, July 17th, in the studios in Nashville. But there will be limited. There will be limited attendance, so it won't be jacked. But they'll have crowds for the first time. Since
that's where I would have done Kenny versus Moose. You know.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%.
I hope it's not a three-way like Moose and Callahan and Kenny. Like, just have someone win straight up.
Yeah. So,
let's put it this way: the last Impact Plus / pay-per-view to have a crowd was Sacrifice in February of 2020.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 2009.
I know, right? Yeah. 2020, and Tessa was still champion. So that tells you how far back that is. Speaking of Sacrifice 2009, Steve Willie, do you remember the main event of Sacrifice 2009?
Sting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good guess.
Yep.
Against. That's too early for Magnus. Sting versus AJ.
It was Mick Foley, who at the time was the world champion. So it tells you the struggle.
Remember that.
It tells you the deal in 2009 in TNA.
Yeah.
Foley versus Jarrett versus Kurt versus Sting in a four-way ultimate sacrifice match for the world heavyweight title, which I can't see Foley actually retaining it. Who won, actually? Sting did win, actually. So AJ was on that card as the Legends champion.
Oh, God.
And he beat Booker T in an I Quit match.
That was
Samoa Joe wrestled Kevin Nash on that show, too. Anyway, we move on.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of guys who couldn't move anymore.
Nope. That's a struggle. So Slammiversary will be on Saturday, July 17th in Nashville, and it will be with a limited audience. Well, since we're talking AEW, why don't we stick with AEW? And obviously the big news is that today, Tony Khan, Rick Moranis himself, was on WFAN. He was on Boomer and Geo this morning. And he announced that on September 22nd, AEW will be doing an outdoor Dynamite live from Arthur Ashe Stadium in the borough of Queens, which is, of course, where the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament is every year. So, yes, you are correct, Nathaniel. AEW will be literally a Metro North ride from my house. Now, before we get to whether I will be there to get Chris Jericho's moob-sweated scarf for a Coca-Cola, this is actually, in all getting back seriously, I think it's a good move. I thought that this must have been originally where the Dynamite taping was going to be at the Rock in Newark, but I'm going to AEW's website now because I want to take a look and see the my computer's going to melt. You're never here, the Dynamite Grand Slam. So let's see. So, looking ahead, there's Dynamite in Jacksonville. Then, of course, Road Rager will be in Miami at the James L. Knight Center on July 7th. Fighter Fest Night 1. And then now this is where they start traveling. Fighter Fest Night 1 in Cedar Park, Texas. Then Night 2 the following week in Garland, Texas. Fight for the Fallen will be on July 28th at Bojangles Coliseum in Charlotte. Then Dynamite, then there's a big gap between July 28th and August 18th, which is weird. Then there's Dynamite in Houston, Milwaukee, Steve.
Yeah, I'll be there. That was planned pre-pandemic, and I think this is the third or fourth time it's been rescheduled, everything.
UWM Panther Arena. Then September 8th in Boston.
I have tickets to that. I didn't realize it was there.
September 8th. Yeah, the UWM Panther Arena. September 8th at the Aganis Arena or Agonis. I don't remember. The people call it ass eating, whatever. At where BU plays. Then the 15th. Oh, no. The 15th is in Newark at The Rock. The 22nd. So it was an open date. Now we know why. So Wednesday night, September 15th, Dynamite will be in Newark at The Rock. And then the following Wednesday, September 22nd, they will be at the Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, in Flushing, where the U.S. Open is. And it's right across the street from Citi Field. Speaking of, and then the following week, they're in Rochester, October 6th in Philadelphia, November 5th in St. Louis, and then next January 12th, they're in New Orleans. So that's the whole AEW schedule. I just realized something. First off, Steve, your thoughts on the announcement today that they're going to be outdoors at a tennis stadium?
Oh, I'm always one who wants wrestling to be in a unique setting, and I don't know what the weather's like at the end of September in Queens. Hopefully the weather will cooperate with them, but I saw a picture of that stadium today, and if it's the same one that US Open is always at, that's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool looking arena with the open roof. So that's pretty exciting to me. Isn't the WWE that's going to be outdoors too in Vegas for SummerSlam? So yes. I'm all for these kind of different looking shows, which is why, you know, Daily Place was pretty fun for a while until it just, you know, got to be a little monotonous, but there's nothing really you can do. So, man, I'm happy they're touring again though.
Mm. So I'm looking at the reason I'm on the Mets website, which, on a side note, Steve, you guys are pathetic.
Well, I mean, what did I do?
Well, DeGrom struck out 8 in the first 3 innings tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Left after 3 innings with shoulder soreness, which I know is a precaution thing because we're going to be babying him for the whole regular season. It's the 8th inning, and you're still getting one hit. Really? We took our ace out 5 innings ago, and you still only have one hit.
Maybe they still think he's in.
Well, it's a home. It must be a home run because you have a run, but you're down 6-1.
Yeah.
I'm looking ahead to September because I want to see if the Mets are home. I'm curious if because that would be fucking chaos if that was the case. Thank God for that fucking
Kenny?
Subway ride. Kenny?
Kenny
Kess. Yeah. Kenny Kess. Yeah. Kenny Kess. No, we may see him in future episodes of our TNA Classic pay-per-view recap. No, the Mets are at Fenway that night. So there will not be chaos on the 7 train going from Grand Central to out to Willits Point. So for all you Met fans like me out there, the Mets are not home that night. They're at Fenway. So, all right, Nate, your thoughts? I gotta admit, kind of impressed.
Yeah, I think it's a great move. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the New York metropolitan area as a visitor, but watching from the comfort of my own home, like it's going to be a great atmosphere. You know, anytime you've got wrestling in New York, you know, whether it's WWE or even Impact, like those are some of the best Impact shows during some of the worst Impact years were when they were in New York. And so, like, I expect this to be no different. And it's good to see AEW kind of expanding their reach a little bit.
Right.
You know, not that this makes them an immediate challenger to Vince's throne, or however Tony Khan worded that tweet, because I'm sure Tony Khan is the one tweeting it all to hours of the night, Steve Willie, personally himself. But I think it, like, just from a television experience, it's going to be an electric atmosphere. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, I got to say, Nathaniel, if you just go up 95, you always have a home right here with me. You can always stay here with me. It's not Daly's place. It's Scotty's place. The door is always open for you. The New York metro area always welcomes the Godfather. You should know.
Why does Scott have a full length poster of Triple H above the above the bed in the guest room? This is weird.
He must have thought it was Triple H and not Shawn Michaels in Playgirl in 1992. No, I think it's a good move. And truth be told, guys, tickets are cheap. Never know.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Maybe myself, maybe the doctor, Dr. G, maybe little J. Arsenio D'Amato, maybe some of us Northeasterners might. I may do it, guys.
Yeah.
I may do it. Maybe
like,
I'll get
you know, spot. Like Jericho and Kingston and guys like Santana and Ortiz, like they're going to have the crowd eating out of their hands. It, like even if you're not watching week to week, Scotty, I think it'd just be a fun night.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Why don't we look at the rankings? Maybe we'll start doing this because I'd like to make fun of them. Here are the rankings in AEW, because there are rankings as of this past Wednesday, the 16th. Of course, Kenny Omega is your world champion. Miro is your TNT champion. Number five is Powerhouse Hobbs at number five. Number four, Orange Cassidy, who should be dropping. Number three, Darby Allin. Number two, Hangman Page, still lingering where he should be champion. And number one, Dillon McKay's son, Jungle Boy. What do you think of that, guys? Jungle Boy. Is Jungle Boy really going to get a title shot? I mean, really?
Yeah, the 26.
I'm excited.
On the Saturday night, yeah, he's been super over.
In honor of his father. I think the 90210 crowd, cash should be there, and Jungle Boy should win the title. That'd be great if Jungle Boy won it and Orange Cassidy couldn't. So, the women's rankings, of course, Britt Baker's your champion. Chris Statlander is number five. Sheeta is four. Wow, she dropped, huh? She just lost the belt and she's already fourth. Thunder Rosa is three. I'd love to see her beat Britt Baker and bring the belt to Power. Number two is, I should have my Tay Conti, right? Tay. Okay. And number one is Nyla Rose, who at this point, I can't believe hasn't won the women's belt either. So
she did. She was second. She was the one who beat Riho.
So she beat Riho and Sheeta beat her. Why do I not remember that? I always thought Sheeta beat Riho. So
Sheeta beat Nyla.
But Nyla Rose had it for what, like a week and a half?
I can't recall. It wasn't
really that long. I'll have to look.
No.
And then the tag team rankings, of course, the Bucks.
So that was pre-Vicky Guerrero with Nyla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vicky not earning her keep.
Yeah. The overrated Bucks are your champions. Oh, that's just my opinion. Number five, Santana and Ortiz. Number four, FTR. Number three, Private Party. Number two, The Acclaimed. And number one is Varsity Blondes. My man, Pillman's Kid. Okay, so there's your rankings in AEW. So what's the how do they rank like the TNT champion? Is that like the number two guy? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, they're pretty much they're kind of loose with the rankings. You know, sometimes people will challenge, you know, maybe based on a feud, but they've been doing way better on it. Like the Varsity Blondes did actually have a tag team title shot because they were getting all these wins on Dark, but. The TNT is almost like John Cena's US belt at this point, where it's more they have like some open challenge stuff too. It's like Miro went against Evil Uno, and it was like Evil Uno's first singles match in years and years and years because he's always been a tag team,
right?
Trying to think some of the other ones they have. They had, like Lance Archer at the pay per view, which was you know total hoss match, which was kind of fun,
right? Yeah. One thing I will say, and I like this from the beginning, and Justin and I have said this for years when we talked on the Place to Be podcast. I like rankings. That was one thing I have to admit in the beginning I did like about AEW. I find them sometimes they don't pay attention to them. I think that's kind of silly, but.
Yeah, for a while they really didn't. They're doing better now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Hangman Page deserves the belt at some point. I still say it. All throughout 2019, he was pumped up. He was the guy. And then he lost to Jericho for the inaugural belt and hasn't even sniffed a title shot since. And I just find that criminal.
I think All Out is where it's going to happen. I think they're going to pull the trigger because they had – he was the number one contender and then Cage knocked him off. And so that's why they had the rematch at the last – Double or Nothing, and he's just kind of hanging at number two right now, no pun intended. And I think that's where they're going to pull the trigger in front of fans. And you're going to start seeing Kenny lose these belts, all of them, by the end of the year. I think Andrade is going to win that AAA belt, and then lose to Kenny in AEW to kind of return the favor. And I, like I said, I don't know what they're going to do with the Impact belt at this point, but Paige, it's the story. And Tony Khan, you can be a fan of him or not. He's done a really good job with long-term booking. And, you know, Paige lost the first title match to Jericho. Then he lost to Kenny at the end of that tournament at Full Gear. And that was right after Kenny and Paige split their tag team. And, you know, who's going to bring down the Elite? The guy who left the Elite. So, All Out is where I think it's going to happen. If not, Full Gear. But Paige will be the champion by the end of this year.
I hope so. I had a thing on my mind and I completely brain farted. But that's my take on it. Well, I know what I wanted to say. So obviously Andrade El Idolo. I don't know if you guys mentioned this on the last show. I'm trying to remember if you did or not, because I listened to it and it was tremendous, by the way. I'm trying to remember if you mentioned it though. I think Andrade is not an AEW employee. I think he's a AAA employee who showed up on Dynamite just to show up on Dynamite. But I think, I think he's going to beat Kenny for the AAA belt at a AAA show, AEW show. So do we think that, Nate? Do you think he's a AAA employee that just showed up? I don't think he's an AEW worker.
I think he's a AAA employee first and foremost, but as we've seen with people from other companies, like, that doesn't negate him from showing up on AEW. So I could see him like pop up from time to time leading up to the match, but he's AAA first and foremost.
Yeah, no, I agree. You think so, Steve?
Yeah, they put out the little Andrade is All Elite thing graphic, and they've only done that with people they've signed. Mm-hmm. So I do agree, though. I think this is the wave of the future where guys are going to be allowed to work multiple places at the same time, and I am all for it. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in New Japan as well.
I said all along he was going to go to New Japan.
So. Yeah, because he was there for a while before he got signed.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
I love it. I love having guys being able, you know, kind of like the territories, go from place to place.
No, I agree. And I think it, the only reason I'm being critical a little bit of the AEW Impact thing is it's been one-sided. Impact is just look like a chump every time. And having said that, it feels like it's Kenny versus Impact and not AEW versus Impact. Like, why don't you work something on the opposite and have Deonna Purrazzo start fucking up the AEW women on their roster. Maybe not Britt because she's a heel, but I don't know. That's just my opinion. But anyway,
there's totally been a shift though with that, because it did feel like AEW versus Impact went on Impact when like Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone showed up and were just ragging on them those commercials, and even Khan and Jerry Lynn showed up for a couple times. But watching that match against Moose. Like, Tony Schiavone was all with Scott D'Amore and was rooting for Moose. And it's just got, I think it's flipped where it's Don Callis versus everybody.
Right.
And Don Callis, he even calls himself the Puppet Master, but it's now like everyone, storyline is annoyed with Omega, the Bucks, and Don Callis. And, you know, nobody cares about the Good Brothers. I'm sorry. But, Tony and Scott D'Amore were total pro Impact on that show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, we all know, we've seen Steve Willey, you know, going back to the old TNA shows. Tony Schiavone is Impact through and through.
OG TNA. Hey, before we go on to a little shout out to Don West, who learned how to brain the FOMO. But, you know, while we were talking about TNA and Impact, it kind of just triggered that for me. God, hope he does well, because he's still a pretty young guy.
Yeah, he is. What is he? He's probably older than me, so he's probably what?
I would guess in his 50s, around 60, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yes. Prayers out to Don West.
57.
57. Yeah, too young. Let's get the prayers out to everyone, because it does work. All right, let's move on now to, speaking of New Japan, good segue, Mr. Willie. New Japan issued a press release announcing that the Wrestle Grand Slam pay-per-view from the Tokyo Dome, which is originally scheduled for May 29th, but was postponed due to their COVID fucking mess, will now be on July 25th. The show's headliner will see new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion Shingo Takagi, who beat my beloved Okada, defend the gold against the former champion Kota Ibushi. Alternate dates for Wrestle Grand Slam was May 15th were carefully considered, but due to scheduling conflicts, an alternate date could not be found for the immediate future. As a result, New Japan has arrived at the decision to cancel the Yokohama Stadium card. All ticket holders will be refunded. We apologize for the fan to the fans, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
I just had breaking news as we were talking, something that I'm intrigued by, but I will answer your question first. I'm intrigued by it because I'm very, very, very excited about Takagi winning. I know that wasn't the plan and, you know, Ospreay won, but he's been a longtime guy with Dragon Gate, and you never know where their New Japan is going to. They're very territorial, it feels like, that if you're going to be big, you have to come up through their system.
Right.
And, you know, Okada, for instance, Tanahashi, you know, Nakamura, it's very rare that you have like an AJ coming in over the last few years. And so Ibushi took a really, really long time for them to put him over the top because he was seen as a DDT guy. So I know they had to do it with Ospreay's injury, but, you know, Takagi was a long time Dragon Gate guy, and he's no spring chicken. He's pushing 40. He seems young based on just not being in New Japan that much, but he deserves the chance. It was cool that he beat Okada. It's gonna be cool to go against Ibushi. In terms of the shows themselves, Japan is just in a weird place with them. We talked about this last time, Nate, just being very much against vaccination because of a poor history in that country with vaccination, like with side effects from previous medications. And I think it was, I read since the last time, I think it was dengue fever, I don't know how to pronounce that. They had a really hard time with their vaccination program there. So the last time I saw, I think it was like only 3% of the population is vaccinated. And I don't think they're going to have many people for these shows. They booked these huge venues in hopes that things were looking so much better. I'm thinking there's only going to be like 3,000, 4,000 people showing up to the Tokyo Dome. And like, how many does that hold? 50,000? They had it, I think, set up for 25,000 during January 4th, during, why can't I think of the name of the show? What's the big show name? It's only the WrestleMania, the January 4th show.
Wrestle Kingdom.
Thank you.
Good God. Are you worried about getting COVID at the UWM Panther Arena? Is that what you're worried about?
No. That's the former Mecca, by the way.
Oh, well, then it's not. It's perfectly great.
Yeah.
Jack Sigmund's legacy will always live there.
Yeah, let me pop in with, because this is something that I've wondered what they're going to do with. They just announced Tony Khan announced what they're going to be doing with Rampage and Taping Dark and Dark Elevation. So Rampage is going to be live on some weeks and taped on others. So they are going to be doing a live, on Friday night before All Out, they're going to do a live Rampage for the Go Home show. Same with the Go Home show for All Full Gear in November. There will be sometimes they're going to tape it after Dynamite, and that includes the Queen show that just got announced. So if you go to that show, you'll get the 2 hours of Dynamite followed by an hour of Rampage with Elevation, because those Dark and Elevation shows were getting incredibly long. I know that they've cut down on the time recently. They're going to tape Elevation before Dynamite. They used to tape Dark before Dynamite, so they're going to do Elevation before Dynamite in front of the big crowds. It will be shorter, and they may add a couple matches here and there that are taped. And then he's going to get a venue. I would suppose that it's going to be Daly's Place that will be exclusively used for Dark. And then when he says other content, I'm assuming that will be like video production and such. So that will be like their kind of developmental. I'm hoping that that show gets to be much smaller at all. So yeah, Rampage live some days, taped after Dynamite some days. And then Elevation before Dynamite on those other times. So I was interested in how they were going to do that, because the last thing I want is like a 5-hour Dynamite taping each week. Like, yeah, I'm happy for live shows being back, but even at Double or the Dynamite that they did live, the Friday night one, the crowd was dead by the end of it because they had taped all those Elevation and Dark matches beforehand, and it was midnight Eastern time, and by the time the show ended, no one wants that. Is that a Steve Willie with breaking news?
Impressive.
Thank you. I'll break in as further events warrant.
So, of course, Takagi won the title a couple weeks ago. You guys talked about it at Dominion, beating Okada in 36:06. Takagi's 38 years old.
Yeah, I thought he was getting closer there.
Yeah. I can't believe it still blows my mind. All of the stuff that Okada has done in his amazing wrestling career, and he's only 33. Mm-hmm. Having said that, he needs a vacation. Ibushi beat Jeff Cobb on that. Just a quick recap of Dominion. Ibushi beat Cobb. El Desperado retained the junior heavyweight title. And, of course, there was a 10-man and a 6-man, because there always has to be a 10-man and a 6-man. The next show is what, I guess, Kizuna Road?
Yeah, they have a few of those kind of shows. There's like three of them in each one. They're all like tag matches, and they have one or two big matches at the end, like a title match.
So I'm assuming the next big thing, obviously Grand Slam, but when are
they're
going to
do a couple other baseball stadium shows, I believe, as well.
When are they doing?
That were scheduled for a couple months ago.
When are they doing G1?
Hold on one second. I think they're doing that after the Olympics.
Okay.
So in September, I believe, is when they were doing it. That is what I think is doing. I can check right now as we're talking, but I believe, Kizuna Road, sponsored by Godzilla versus Kong, the whole tour.
Oh.
They're also going to be presenting Summer Struggle in Sapporo. That's very exciting.
Yeah. So these MetLife Dome shows in September, the 2-night Wrestle Grand Slam, they've been there since 2014. Yeah. Right? I don't know if you mentioned that, Steve.
Yeah. Okada versus Nakamura.
Right. It was the G1. It was the final,
I believe.
Yeah, it was a final. It was Okada's second tournament win. So that's pretty cool. So what about Will? Is Takagi going to hold on to the belt and then Will just comes back and wins it? What do you think, Steve?
I like Will from Texas. We haven't had him on in a while. I don't know.
He's retired. It's like bringing back Matt Cardona or something. No. Does Willie O just get the belt back in his return?
I wonder if they'll do that, like wait until the next Wrestle Kingdom. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but they've been doing those 2-day shows, so I can see him. Obviously, if they wanted him to win the title, they'll have him come back and win it again at some point.
Right.
They like those redemption stories there.
I can't believe that Okada has just kept trucking along. Like, I mean, if there's anybody that deserves like a vacay, it's him. And maybe once Japan opens up and some gaijins can come in, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps he could take a spell, you know? Because I feel like he's on like the Bret Hart thing where from, 1985 till the night after WrestleMania 12, 11 straight years without a break. I feel like that's Okada since like, what, 2012, right? I feel like he has not taken a break. So maybe this is a good time when the gaijins come in and they could start loosening up the roster a little bit. Although, who knows? I mean, Japan's COVID situation. I know you guys talked about it on the last show. The Olympics may still be in moderate jeopardy.
Oh, I think they're going to do it no matter what. And just a matter of how many people are going to be allowed to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to happen. I don't think they could stall it. Because next year is the winter. I mean, they could do the two Olympics. We did it for decades before splitting it up in the early 90s. What's the dates for the Summer Olympics? When are they supposed to start?
August.
Yeah. Let's see. 20. Yeah, it's supposed to be July 23rd to August 8th. And then, of course, next year, it's a quick turnaround because we go from the beginning of August for the summer, and then in early February we jump right into the Winter Olympics in Beijing, and then the Summer Olympics in 2024. For anybody who's interested, are in Paris. Really.
Texas.
Yes. Then the 2026 Winter Olympics are in Milano Cortina, which is, of course, Italy. And then, gentlemen, in honor of my favorite Summer Olympics of all time, well, second favorite Summer Olympics of all time, 2028, we'll be back in L.A. Because I remember when I was 11 years old, the awesome Summer Olympics of 1984 in LA, Carl Lewis owning shit in those track and field.
Yep.
And maybe they'll bring him back to sing the national anthem.
Let's not go that far. Maybe Edwin Moses could.
Yeah, I was just going to say Edwin Moses, Mary Lou Retton.
They could bring back Zola Budd. They could have Zola Budd sing it, and then Mary Decker Slaney could hit her with a chair. You tricked me, you bitch! God. I mean, I know everybody talks about, just a sidebar for a minute, I know everybody talks about the 92 Dream Team as one of the greatest basketball teams ever put together. But I got to be honest, guys, as a college basketball fan, I'm trying to find the roster. That 1984 basketball team was amazing in terms of college athletes. I'm trying to find the, here we go. Here was the roster. Before anybody laughs, these are guys in college. So if I say somebody's name and they're like, he sucked in the NBA, that's not the point. This was the men's team that won the gold in 84. You had Steve Alford, who was a stud at Indiana. Leon Wood, of course, Big Pat, Patrick Ewing, who had just come off winning a national championship. Vern Fleming, Alvin Robertson, great guard. Some guy that played for Carolina. I don't remember his name.
Sam Perkins.
Mike somebody. Joe Klein, who everybody laughs at, but was a good player in college. John Konkak, another guy you can all laugh at, but his SMU team almost beat Georgetown in the first round that year in 84. Wayman Tisdale, tremendous player at Oklahoma, and lest we forget, the number two pick after Patrick in 84.
Great bass player.
Yeah, a tremendous bass player. Chris Mullen, St. John's stud. Sam Perkins, as you mentioned, Steve. And Jeff Turner. So that 84 Olympic team, that I think Big John coached him, actually, were fucking amazing. Just to let you know, amazing. Were they the 92 team? No, but no one ever will be. Anyway, just wanted to sidebar
that. There's some great stories in the latest Jordan biography that came out a bit before The Last Dance. Man, I'm having brain farts today. But I was able to tell you who was in the 2014 G1 match in a baseball stadium.
And you remembered Sam Perkins.
Yeah, Sam Perkins. But yeah, Jordan just lit people up in those tryouts and practices.
I want to find.
Because he hate-loved Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, he did. Well, he
absolutely loved him, but just...
Yeah, because he was a beast.
Took him to school all the time.
Guess who I don't see on this team? Well, he was in the NBA by then. I guess Isaiah's chance to be on an Olympic winning team went up in smoke because there was no 19 because the U.S. didn't go to the 80 Winter Olympics, Summer Olympics in Moscow. So Michael could be like, I got two gold medals. I got two gold medals, bitch. You don't, Isaiah.
Even though he had all the qualifications.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Still one of the greatest clips from that documentary, Steve. I had all the qualifications, but I wasn't picked.
Great. You know what's funny, Steve? On a side note, continuing our sports sidebar here, I actually remember reading because I did. I was very respectful of those '91 Bulls when they knocked out my aging Lakers in the '91 Finals. But I remember that summer buying, or the summer, the year after buying the Jordan Rules by Sam Smith. And honestly, you know, it's kind of sad. I didn't really care. You know, like, all right, Michael's Michael. Yes, he's the best player on that team. Tough shit. You know, it didn't bother me for some reason. The one more thing about the Dream Team. apparently, I know. I'm like, it's like that episode, Steve. Remember that episode of Main Event years and years ago? And we were trying to avoid talking about the Royal Rumble by talking about other things. That's kind of how I feel tonight because I know we're going to preview Hell in a Cell, but we will preview Hell in a Cell, but because the poster has Lashley on it, which is kind of cool looking. Actually, the poster is kind of cool looking. Did the Dream Team documentary? Did anybody watch that? Did you guys watch that? The Dream Team documentary that NBA TV did? I think it was NBA TV.
No.
Yeah, they did a documentary on the Dream Team. And apparently, there is some video footage somewhere of a scrimmage that they played 5-on-5 that apparently some people say is the greatest basketball game ever played. It was a scrimmage between... between the Dream Team split 5-on-5 before the Olympics that year. And Michael was covering, Magic was covering Michael and, you know, Ewing and Malone and, you know, Bird moving. I mean, apparently it's arguably like the greatest basketball you'll ever see played ever in the history of ever, you know? So now, I'm wondering if that's somewhere.
I am a fan of synchronicity and working together to plug each other's shows. There is a show I like called The Kings of Sport, hosted by Nate Milton and Marcus Vanderberg.
Oh,
and
you know, I've heard about it.
Yeah, they have this Patreon feed.
Oh,
and
do?
On there are classic Kings of Sport episodes with Nate, Marcus, and some other guy. And Marcus talked about meeting Magic Johnson several times in his career. Or I think there were some conferences in Magic. He said that Magic told him that story many times.
Yeah, because they I want to say they practiced before they left for Barcelona. They were practicing out in La Jolla, California. And like every security guard or custodian at the college, I think it was San Diego State. No, it wasn't San Diego State, but it was one of the schools out there. Wherever they were practicing, like all of the custodians had stories of varying versions of that scrimmage where they're like, this was better than the NBA Finals. And yeah, like Marcus was part of Magic's foundation when he was in high school, and he's like, yeah, Magic will tell that story anytime he can get to, and every time he tells it like it's the first time he's ever told it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it is. For once, this is during the Olympics, actually. For one scrimmage, the group divided into two teams, Blue led by John. So Blue was Magic, Charles, the Admiral, Mullen, and Leitner, and the white team was Michael, the Mailman, Patrick, Scotty, and Larry. Clyde Drexler was hurt, and John Stockton was hurt. Daly told the teams to play all you got now, all you got. Jordan's team won by 4. Michael said it was the best game he was ever in, and Sports Illustrated later called it the greatest game nobody ever saw. But somewhere, apparently, there is video clips of this mythical blue versus white game between the dream teams. So
I'm just picturing John Stockton, Clyde Drexler in the training room, just bags of ice all over their legs, like, nah, we're good. We're good. We don't need to be a part of this.
Now, we all know why Isaiah didn't make the team, because, well, we know why. The other big controversy, which I didn't realize, we are going to do Hell in a Cell, folks. We are. We promise. Is Leitner, mm-hmm. who, of course, nobody likes, over Shaq. Was Shaq the better player? Probably. But unfortunately, Shaq's pro resume is better than Leitner's, of course. But can we argue 2 back-to-back national championships? Hate to say it. But,
yeah, but
I don't
know.
The
name. You know, he was the name at that point.
Yeah. And Leitner was a better fit for what they were doing. And also, I argued at the time, remember, like, when I was a kid watching the team be selected, like, I'd argue Alonzo was a better fit for that team than Shaq would have been.
I love Zoe. Yes, you're right. They were also thinking of 2 other guys who you forget about because their pro careers were mediocre at best, but their college careers were amazing. Jimmy Jackson. Because those early 90s Ohio State teams were badass. And probably the last great USC player before O.J. Mayo's kind of mess that he had there, Harold Miner.
Oh, yeah, he was really good.
He was great. But ultimately, I think
that trip would have ruined Harold Miner. Like, he didn't have a great NBA career, but that trip would have ended his NBA career before it started, because you know Michael would have been so petty.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you the baby me? Okay. Yeah, every know, right? day in practice. Oh, you baby me?
You would have made
he murdered Tony Kukoc just for the sheer fact that he got drafted to his own team.
They did Tony so dirty.
Well, the worst was that. Remember that dude that played for the, it was on The Last Dance? That dude that played for the Bullets?
LeBradford Smith.
Yeah, he had a great game. He had one great game against the Bulls, and I guess he was talking shit. And then the next game, Michael pretty much made him crap his pants. So I think he's still in the fetal position right now.
And it turned out like what he said wasn't even what Jordan told people he said, because Michael will make things up, because Michael Jordan is a petty, petty human being.
He really is. That's what. Well, you know what? That's what happens when you're a gambler. You always petty because you always want to win. So. All right.
That's anyway, why that SNL skit from a few months back is so great, where they had Keegan-Michael Key playing Jordan.
Yes.
And it was the scene with him and the security guard playing quarters.
Yep.
Like, because that is I can buy that as something Jordan would do, because Jordan doesn't let anything slide.
That's funny. And by the way, on a side note, you know who the highest scorer was on the Dream Team? I thought easily it was Michael. It was actually Barkley.
I was going to say, it had to have been Barkley. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, he scored like 80 against Angola and then made them all fucking cry. And then they wanted his autograph after losing, like, you know, 111-12. They wanted his autograph.
Yeah, because I want to say Barkley led the team in minutes, because Barkley was getting the most out of this trip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah, he was. There's no doubt he was getting it. He was eating this shit up like crazy, throwing the Angolan guys around. But then they all wanted his autograph after it was like, you know, 48-2 with the hat. It was like watching the UConn women. So anyway, all right, enough Dream Team talk, as much as I can talk about them all night. All right, let us look ahead to Sunday, gentlemen, at the Thunderdome for Hell in a Cell, the final WWE Peacock pay-per-view extravaganza without fans. Of course, they'll be back with fans next month in July at Money in the Bank. 5 matches at the moment. They may add, as of this recording, SmackDown hasn't aired yet, so there may be more. But this is what we have so far. We have 5 title matches. Or 5 matches, 4 title matches. We'll begin with a singles match between Alexa Bliss and Shayna Baszler. All about, of course, the fun house and her dollhouse or whatever the hell it's called. I like Alexa Bliss here. I'm kind of digging this gimmick. I'm actually having fun with it. I think it's something that's going to keep going until Bray is healthy. So even though we all know Shane is the better wrestler, I think I like Alexa here, Steve.
Are you enjoying it on a it's so bad it's good level?
Kind of.
I can respect that.
It's like getting hit by a train.
Yeah.
Seeing the guts all over the road kind of thing. Rubbernecking, as we call it here in the Northeast. Rubbernecking.
I saw the video of Shayna Baszler being scared, like, in the back. And it was like, you know, Shayna Baszler, the ultimate badass. And it just reminded me of Undertaker skits with, like, Yokozuna. Like, oh, he's so scared of the casket. It's just like that, this version of it. They had an actual match would be fun. I think Alexa Bliss is going to win. Boy, I have no interest in it, though. Like, what's Reginald going to do? Are there going to be pyro go off again? This should be the main event. This should be the main event. And at the end of the show, like, kind of like Vince's limo explodes. Let all the Thunderdome screams.
Yes, yes.
That would crash to the ground.
Now you've talked me into this match, Steve Willie.
Yeah, Steve Aloysius Willie. I think, because if this is the last Thunderdome pay-per-view, the building should just fucking melt. I like that.
Or at least let the producers come out and just start throwing rocks at those screens. Like the interns that had to like sit and watch every single screen.
Or even better, or Kevin Bucktooth Fuckface Dunn walks out and the whole thing collapses on him. That would be even better.
Randy Orton just throws him into it, yeah.
What do you think, Nate?
I mean, this, like, the particulars of this match aside, I will give them credit, because we've got three paper.
Just out of five, yeah.
Yeah, decent women matches on the card. I'm with you that Alexa's going to win, just because Shayna doesn't mean anything right now. You know, she's not in a position to compete for the women's title. Looks like her and the wonderful Nia Jax are out of the tag title picture for the moment. So yeah, I see this continuing, because it doesn't matter whether we like it or not. Vince McMahon likes this, I think, and Vince is entertained by all of this. So yeah, I think Alexa wins, but I am with Steve Willie. Like, I would love if they just made this the main event and just tore the Thunderdome down, literally and figuratively. Also, because much like my pick of, you know, that classic women's tag team title match at WrestleMania, I just want to see people upset on Twitter. And I know that this match is going to piss a lot of people off.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Is funny that this could be the main event just to see the place explode. That would be kind of awesome. That would be nuts. All right. Let's keep with the women. Let's talk about the two women's matches. Our girl, Bianca Belair, will defend the SmackDown women's title against Bayley. I don't think there's any need for any. I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's any need for any belts to change. But we'll get to that one by one. I think this match is fun. I think Bianca and Bayley work well together. So we'll work well together. So I think Bianca will retain, Nate, but I kind of dig this match.
Yeah, it should be a good match. And I agree that most, if not all of the champions are going to retain. Spoiler alert. I still have issues with the storylines that they've had for Bianca. Like, I think the matches have all been good. You know, this is going back to WrestleMania with her and Sasha. I just don't know if they found Bianca's character yet as champion. But that being said, should be a fun match, and Bianca retains.
Steve?
Yeah, I can agree with that. There's been, outside of the Roman stuff, which I've loved, it feels like both WWE and AEW have been in this holding pattern, waiting for fans to start off. Like, this is like, okay, we're just gonna get through there. Because even the stuff with Bayley is just there's not been much in the line of physical contact. It's just Bayley laughing. I don't even know what Bayley is. Bayley supposed to be Karen? Like Karen at this point? Like, I don't even know what her character is.
I think so. And like, and that's something like, I think they could have done a lot more with this feud, Steve. Like there's some levels they could have played around with, but I don't know if they, I don't know if they want to, and B, I don't know if they know how to do it without going too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like all these matches on paper are interesting. It's just like, I don't get how when we get to the next women's match, we can say the same. I'm not exactly sure why they're getting to them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
With the exception of one.
Mm. On the other side of the coin, Rhea Ripley will defend the Raw women's title against Charlotte. I think Rhea wins. This will be a fun little stiff fest. I think the crowd would be pretty pissed if Charlotte won, or the screens will self will do it on their own. Sparks will fly. There's no need for Rhea to lose here. She needs her win back, and I think she gets it, Nate.
Yeah, this will be a really fun match. Again, though, I think I'm in the same category as Steve Willey, where this is something you really could have held off with until SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Rhea retains. I do like that Charlotte's been a little bit more and more unhinged as the weeks have gone on, and I'm intrigued to see where that goes. But by the same token, like, we've already got an unstable blonde chick on the show with Alexa. So I don't know if there's any space for Charlotte to be the crazy one, Steve.
Hmm.
Well, the most over person in this feud right now is Nikki Cross.
Yes.
Like, Nikki's definitely
another person who's twice, playing, right? Somebody with a bit of a loose grip on reality, mm. Shall we say?
Yes.
Yeah, and yeah, like why? She's the most over person. She beat Charlotte Flair what, twice at this point? Once by count out.
Didn't she beat Rhea as well?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, and they did the beat the clock stuff, and she, they were trying to like bury her. Like, not in storyline, they were trying to bury her, and she finally
really. This should be Nikki's match, and we hold off on Charlotte until SummerSlam.
Yep, or at least make it a three way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just happy that Nikki Cross is actually getting on TV, because like her character at NXT was. I've talked about this before on the show, like one of my favorite, one of my kids' favorite stories, mm-hmm. like her character and. Then she like, oh, she's really cute. Let's glam her up a little bit. Like, but take away the best part of her character. You can do both. Now she's like the Marco stunt of this feud.
She's probably got a couple inches on Marco, though.
Yeah.
That's funny. but I think we're safe to say that Rhea will retain. And finally, our two Hell in a Cell matches. This first one, maybe I'm just being a sadist, but Roman Reigns will defend the Universal title against Rey Mysterio. Am I sick for thinking that I just want this to be 8 minutes of Rey literally getting just bloody down to goo? No disrespect to Rey, but Roman's just such a beast right now that why are we even doing this? Is there anything intriguing in this at all? It's the same thing like what year? What was it? Was it the 2010 Rumble when Taker fought Rey? Like,
oh, that's what's the blank in my mind? Yeah,
yeah, I think it's two. You know, it was 2010 because he had the belt, and then Shawn cost him at the Rumble to lead to their match at 26. So yeah, it was 2010 Rumble. Like, is this intriguing in any way? Or is this just kind of a holdover thing for that's what I'm taking this as. This is just the last Roman title defense in front of nobody. So fuck it. Throw him in there and let him get beat up for 10 minutes. That's what I'm thinking, Steve.
Yeah, I think so, too. And this is one of the main matches why I'm thinking, wow, they're just in a holding pattern right now.
Yeah,
because this is last year was when the Roman Reigns character really took off, in my opinion, with the match mm-hmm. with with Jimmy in that match. I get them right. confused, of course. And then, you know, the I Quit match and Jake coming in. That's where this character really took off. And ending the Thunderdome, ending, like, having this be the bookend to that, where Jay gets his match against Roman Reigns, man, I think that would be where to go here. This one came out of nowhere. But, and yeah. I think you're right, Scott. I think that is, and Nate, you can, you know, maybe this is where that is happened. Like, that's the look. Like, this is just going to be 10 minutes. That's why how people will get enjoyment out of it. Everyone knows Ray's not winning. But the enjoyment will be seeing Roman throw Ray around in a Hell in a Cell match. If there's any match that is the trope of not needing a Hell in a Cell match and just having it for the pay-per-view, it's this one. This feud has been going on for, like, literally 1 week.
Yeah. And I think maybe the only reason we're getting this match is that they're holding off on Jay until SummerSlam. Like, maybe that's our big SummerSlam match. And I think there's a way you could have made this a little bit more interesting, Scotty, because there are, like, I think match-wise it'll be fun. Like, it'll be what it is. But I think there's a way you could play up the family dynamic with Ray and Dominic and Roman and his cousins. And like, this match really needed at least 2 or 3 more weeks to cook.
Right.
But they're taking it out of the oven early. And so it's like, it's not raw. It's not something that you can't eat, but it's certainly not what it should be. It's like mushy cake right now. And not like moist, delicious cake, but just mushy, undercooked cake. But that being said, like, I think it'll be fun. Like, I think Ray will put up a good, like, underdog babyface performance. But ultimately, Roman's going to make quick work of him.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I think this is simply a just Roman toyed around, which makes me... I'll ask this one question before we get to the last match. Please tell me we're not going to get a Roman versus Dominic fucking Universal title match. Because I would definitely take pleasure in watching him get the shit kicked out of him for 13, 14 minutes. I have a bad feeling. But maybe.
Honestly, we should have gotten that match first, where Roman just destroyed Dominic and even went too far, and that's what forced the Ray match.
Good idea. I agree. Just spear him like 6 times, 5 yeah. Superman punches, you know, puff his face up. I agree. I'm a little leery. I'm nervous about. I'll say this at the end of the show before we go. All right. So finally, which I think is the main event. A last chance Hell in a Cell match for the WWE Championship. And this Hell in a Cell match at least has some story. Bobby Lashley to defend the title against Drew McIntyre. I love you, Kettleman. Callum McDougal is one of my favorite human beings. But sadly, like Triple H with Batista in 2005, the third time will not be the charm. I think Bobby Lashley retains, Steve.
Yeah, that's the way to go here, is have then Drew wait until whomever beats Bobby Lashley and get his shot back. But, man, I think this is another one we talked about where Bobby Lashley all of a sudden has these women with him and what the heck happened to Cedric and Shelton. that's definitely a thing. But, yeah, that's, again, just kind of prolonging this feud until the next thing, whether that's Cena versus Lashley or something else entirely. But yeah, I do think Lashley retains, and hopefully these two can take a break from each other, because they've been pretty much the last 6 months. And sure enough, like, people complain about the back and forth of stuff and short-term booking, but like, this is a long, long burn that needs to end. Come on, Vince. Middle ground, Vince.
Your thoughts, Nate?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm actually surprised that the match is going through as advertised, because I thought for sure they were going to find a way to shoehorn Kofi into this so that Kofi could take the loss so that Drew retains the right to challenge Lashley. and assuming they won't make that change last minute, I think that, yeah, this is it for Lashley and Drew for a while, and it should be. You know, they've had some decent matches, but I feel like you can't really get the Lashley title reign over until you close the book, close the chapter on Drew. And so, yeah, I think it'll be a fun Haas match, but Bobby Lashley with a definitive win, a clean win, which sets him up for whatever he's got going in the SummerSlam.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you on that. And speaking of SummerSlam, which, of course, August 21st at the Raiders Roomba in Vegas. I feel like that card is all about going to be Roman versus Cena, and the undercard's just going to be absolute crap. Like, I have a bad feeling about that card, that we're going to have Roman and Cena, and the rest of the card's going to be garbage. Let's keep an eye on that, guys, over the next episodes, because I just have a bad feeling. I have a bad feeling that the undercard of that show is going to be absolute shit. So we'll see what happens between now and Money in the Bank, and kind of handicap what happens from then to August 21st. Because
honestly, though, if you're Vince, like, what incentive do you have to make a great card top to bottom? Because I think a lot of the energy in that building, Scotty, is just going to be people being at this show
and sweating their asses off.
You are quite correct. Unless you're in a suite, then you could be very lucky.
So, but, like, I think give him one hot main event match and a lot of filler, and I think, like, at least the people in attendance will be fine with the show. Now, us at home, that's a different story.
Right. I concur. Anyway, let's not be Debbie Downers. We'll see what happens down the line. But anyway, check out Sunday. We will have a Place to Be Nation Twitch feed going on live for Hell in a Cell. So Callum McDoo will be running that, and take a listen. And
Are you sure you want to entrust that to Callum, given the circumstances?
Well, you know what? I do, Nate, only because if that match is last, then he can't do anything before that match. If that's the opener, we could be fucked. So we'll have to be careful with that. So anyway, check out the Place to Be Nation Twitch feed this Sunday. It'll probably start about 6:30 Eastern time, and listen to some of the best talent at the Place to Be Wrestling Network as we do alternate commentary for Hell in a Cell if the current commentary is not to your liking, which most people probably agree.
Got to get the young folks their chance. Don't keep anyone down.
Yes. So get ready, everyone. Sunday, the final fanless pay-per-view or show of the pandemic era will be this Sunday. So, gentlemen, this was a blast. Always is. That'll do it for episode 175 of the main event. We will be back next week, back-to-back episodes. We can get back on our regular schedule. Next week, unless something huge happens, maybe we'll talk about that Slammiversary announcement quick at the beginning of the show, since it will go in line. It'll be our TNA show. We will go back to February of 2003 next week for our next TNA Classic pay-per-view recap. You can follow me on Twitter at PTB Podfather. You could follow the brand on Twitter at PTBN Wrestling. And of course, we have a ton of great shows here on the feed. We had a new the next installment of Jacob and Tyler's GWCW Top 100 Match Countdown. They're on 20 to 11. New episode of Highway to the Impact Zone. Today, this show dropped at noon, but later today, the newest episode of NWA Crock and Roll will be dropping. Well, those guys continuing their YouTube viewing of Before They Were Crockett, while Peacock takes their sweet-ass fucking time putting the territory stuff up on their on the WWE stuff. Nate, what's going on over in the Kings of Sport Patreon?
Yes, you can check out the Patreon. As Steve mentioned, we've started airing our classic episodes of the podcast every weekend. We put up at least two episodes from the very first year of the Kings of Sport with myself, Marcus Vandenberg, and Redacted, otherwise known as Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa. So you can check that out, patreon.com/KingsOfSport. $5 gets you in the door. Find me on Twitter at in the number 8 MOZAIK. There you'll find links to all of the work that I do, in addition to, you know, here on the main event. Just launched a new show on Post Wrestling, but it's not new if you're a member of the Patreon, because you've heard the show before. The NWA podcast, the Nubian Wrestling Advocates, is now a part of Post Wrestling, so you can check that out. The Black Lightning podcast over on the DCTV Podcast Network, we've finished our run with that show, and the last episode just dropped this week, and we had an interview with Rafael Castillo, who was one of the actors on Black Lightning. So you can check that out as we get ready to transition into the Naomi podcast, which Naomi should be coming out next January on the CW, I believe. So looking forward to that. But again, if you want more from me, just follow me on Twitter at @in_8, MOZAIK. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see if Steve's prediction comes true with the Thunderdome going down after that glorious main event.
What were your thoughts on the finale, Nate? I thought that the, not to spoil anything for anybody, maybe I shouldn't say anything. Well, I don't know. It's been a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Did the statute of limitations run out? You think so?
I think anybody that was interested in watching it, unless they're not caught up, they've watched it already.
Okay. So I'm going to do this. Black Lightning finale spoiler. Okay. Did you think that that Tobias's death was kind of anticlimactic?
Oh God! No,
Steve's like, I had one episode left. Yeah, I thought that like they had to condense a lot of story into one episode. Like I thought they should have got a 2-hour finale.
I agree.
Amount of stuff they had to wrap up. Yeah. But yeah, like the fight was anticlimactic, the death was anticlimactic. But I think overall, like they did what they needed to do with the time that they had.
Two things that I want to ask you. Number one, are you bummed that they will not do the Painkiller spinoff?
Yeah, I thought that's a missed opportunity, and there's like still a very, very, very small chance it could get picked up somewhere else, but I doubt it. But like I thought, every time they had a Painkiller segment this season, it just jumped off the screen. And you know, I had a chance to talk to Jordan Calloway a month or so ago, and like the dude is just cool. So it's like I hope that you know, even though this is the end for that Painkiller project, that you know, he gets to do more stuff, more action, because he's really good at it.
I agree. I like him. He's like my number two favorite character on that show. I'm about to tell you my favorite. Before you do it, tell me who your favorite was. After watching the show from beginning to end, who was your favorite character?
I mean, there's a lot of great ones. Like you mentioned Tobias. I thought Tobias was a fantastic villain. Like Wayne Brady was cool. The one season he was on, Wayne Brady was a part of Black Lightning for a season, Steve.
Yes, he was. He
which
was
just and he random, was very, but it
very un Wayne Brady like.
Yes, like he was more Chappelle Show Wayne Brady, where he was just choking bitches. But yeah, like I liked a lot of the different characters on the show. Like I think Jefferson was one of my favorites, but if I had to just pick one. And he didn't make it till season 4, which I think is a shame. But Chief Henderson was my favorite character.
Yeah.
Because he was just, like, no nonsense. Like, even with Black Lightning. Like, he didn't take any crap from Black Lightning. So I was really sad, spoiler alert again, Steve, when they killed him for no reason.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. I didn't understand that either. But you know who I'm going to say my favorite is? Probably because he had the best line. Of the finale, because it was the last line of the finale from episode 1 of season 1. I love Lala.
Yeah, Lala was really good.
I loved Lala because he was
Will
like
Catlett.
Yeah, I just loved the way he grooved. He kind of had that. He was great. Everything about him from that whole show was fucking amazing.
Yeah, like the episode, I think it was season 3, where he showed up and because he like I think Black Lightning had asked for his help early in the episode and he's like no, and then he shows up out of nowhere just to help at the end.
Yeah,
Just shoot, he shoots like three or four people, Steve, and is like, all right, my work is done. It just walks away.
It was so awesome. Oh, my God. I love it.
And
that.
Every time he showed up on screen, like they played some old 70s soul music behind him.
Black Lightning soundtrack.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Wolf is so fucking good. So good. Oh, my God. I didn't even know half the songs. And it was so good.
Like this, like you getting Al Green and the OJs on the CW network, Steve.
Yeah, it was great. Little, you know, little chai lights and, you know, yep. some, oh my God, just. So
yeah, that was a, like, it was a, like, no show was perfect, but I thought it was a pretty strong show.
Yeah, I thought it was too. I thought it was too. You know, it had its ups and downs. Some characters, like Lynn got on my nerves at times.
Yeah.
Both kids got on my fucking nerves at times.
I think they didn't know what to do with Lynn.
Yeah, I don't know, a lot of times. Know what they wanted to do either. Yeah, I agree. I don't know what they I agree with you. I don't know what they wanted to do with her either. No, you're a good point on that. So but yeah, check that show out. Love it. And I was caught up on all my stuff today. I watched all the shows. I gotta be honest, all the CWs I feel like are kind of struggling.
Yeah.
Even Flash, which is my favorite. That season, I think my favorite show right now, just based on the story, is Superman and Lois.
I was just about to say, like, it's funny because you can see clearly what's happening at the CW. Now this is, we went from Dream Team to CW talk. Like, you can see they are passing the torch, where I think 2 years from now, you're going to see Superman and Lois, Stargirl, and Naomi as the main shows. Like, maybe Flash will still be around, but, like, Supergirl's gone, Black Lightning's gone. You could tell Legends has maybe one season left.
Yep.
But, yeah, like, the Superman and Lois, the first couple episodes were a little shaky for me, but they've been really good, like, the last five or six.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree.
And Stargirl, I don't know if you watched that, Scotty. Stargirl is really strong, too. So I think you put Stargirl, Superman, and Lois, and Naomi, if Naomi is as good as I think it's going to be, you put those together, I think that's your new nucleus for the network.
I agree. I think some of these shows, I think, outlived their stretch. I do like Stargirl.
And these new shows have like HBO Max money behind them, so they just look better.
Yeah, absolutely. And with season one of Stargirl, where they can actually, you know, they've gotten the intros out of the way, now we can talk about the JSA, which is what we all want to see. So, and hey, look, the Wilson brothers battling for comic supremacy. You have Luke on the DC side. You have Owen on the Marvel side battling for family supremacy. I think that's fucking hilarious.
It's the converse count of comic books.
Yeah.
that's what we need. Tony Khan to show up on one of these shows.
Yeah, Tony Khan to show up on Stargirl and Nick Khan to show up on Loki. That would be pretty great. Steve, where can everyone find you?
They can find me at my house. You can come over and help with the children. It's summertime. You can find me on...
at the Mecca.
Yeah, come see me at All Out. If you're going All Out, let me know, and so I can avoid you. No, I'm just joking. Steve Willie 1 on Instagram. My show, Feeling Good for Now. I've taken a little bit of a break as I adjust to my new home and work schedule, but we'll be back very soon. You can find that on Twitter, Feeling Good for 1, Feeling Good for, and then the number 1. And that is about it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, gentlemen, always a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back in a week to get back on our regular biweekly schedule. We will pretty much do probably all TNA Impact. We'll talk about this announcement that they're going to have later this week involving Slammiversary, and then we will dive into February of 2003 for our next installment of the TNA Classic pay-per-view recap. I am Brother Scott. He's Brother Nate and Brother Steve. You've been in the main event. Have a great week. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
You know, when you think about this Alexa Shayna thing, I don't even have a joke here, Steve Willie. I just wanted to find some type of framing device so I could talk about how great these Atlanta Hawks are. America's team.
Rey Mysterio, the Spud Webb of WWE.
Trey Young, the Dominic Mysterio of WWE.
They got the same hairline.
I'm keeping all that. I'm keeping all that.
Dude, I saw a great tweet pop up right at the end here. Like, that was the biggest choke job in NBA history since last night. It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone. Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search know what's up with 213. So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis. Some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some heat, so I said, I'm stuck. Since these girls peeping me, I'm gonna glide and swerve. These looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix. I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next? They got my homie hemmed up and they all around. Can't none of them see him if they going straight pound for pound. They wanna come up real quick before they start to clown. I best pull out my and lay them busters down. They got guns to my head, I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town. If I had wings, I would fly. Let me contemplate. I glance in the cut and I see my homie Nate. 16 in the and one in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make somebody's turn. Now they dropping and yelling, it's a tad bit late. Nate Dogg and Warren G had to regulate. Explode. Now I'm switching my mind back into freak mode. If you won't skirt, sit back and observe. I just left a gang of over there on the curb. Now they got the freaks and that's a known fact. Before I got jacked, I was on the same track. Back up, cause it's on N-A-T-E and me, the woman to the G. Just like I thought, they were in the same spot. In need of some desperate help. The Nate Dogg and the G-Child were in need of something else. Sexy as hell, I said, ooh, I like your size. She said my chords broke down and just sing real nice. Would you let me ride? I got a car full of girls and it's going real swell. The next stop is the East Side Motel. To a whole new era, G-Funk, step to this, I dare ya. Funk, on a whole new level. The rhythm is the bass, whoa, and the bass is the treble. Chords, strings, we brings melody. G-Funk, where rhythm is life, and life is rhythm. If you know like I know, you don't wanna step to this. It's the G-Funk era, funked out with a gangster twist. You smoke like I smoke, then you like every day. And if your ass is a buster, 213 will regulate.